nada más griborari. Yashoda nandana vajajana ranjana. Jamuna tira banachari. Yamuna tira banachari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai Om Vishnu Pad Param Hamsa Parivaritaya Ashtotra Shatashi Shrimad Srila Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON BBT Samstapak Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Gaur Premanandi Samaveta Bhaktivinda Ki Jai. All glories of the assembled devotees. All glories of the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Shri Guru and God. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Which verse? I have 27 on the page, but I don't know if that, but maybe it's another verse. 29? We hear 29. Okay. Sarva Shastra Dipiyusha Sarva Vedaika Satpala Sarva Siddhanta Ratnadya Sarva Lokaika Dritprada Sarva Bhagavata Prana Srimad Bhagavata Prabho Kalidvanto Ditho Ditya Shri Krishna Parivartita Paramananda Pattaya Prema Varshakshadayate Sarvada Sarva Sevyaya Shri Krishnaya Namostu Me Madeko Bando Mat Sangin Mad Guru Mad Mahadana Mad Nistaraka Mad Bhagya Madananda Namostu Te Asadu Saruta Dayin Ati nicho chata pada hama buncha pada chin mam prem narit kanta yok spura. Text 29. Bhagavan anugav aha yatam ma baishtam astusham. Brahma Tejak Samartopi Hantum Neche Matam Tume Bhagavan Anugav Aha. Yatam Vaishnamas
Dusham
Brahma Tejak Samartopi Hantum Neche Matam Tume. Bhagavan Anugavaha Matuma Vaishnavastusham Vartopi Matam Neche Matam Tume. Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Anugao, to his due attendants. Aha, said, Yatam, depart from this place. Ma, let there not be. Baishtam, fear. Astu, let there be. Sham, happiness. Brahma, ave Brahmana. Tejaha, the curse. Samartaha, being able. Api, even. Hantu, to nullify. Na icche, do not desire. Matam, approved. To, on the contrary. Me, by me. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Lord then said to his attendants, Jai and Vijay, depart this place, but fear not. All glories unto you. Although I am capable of nullifying the Brahmana's curse, I would not do so. On the contrary, it has my approval. Purport. As explained in connection with text 26, all the incidents that took place had the approval of the Lord. Ordinarily, there is no possibility that the four sages could be so angry with the doorkeepers, nor could the Supreme Lord neglect his two doorkeepers, nor can one come back from Vaikuntha after once taking birth there. All these incidents, therefore, were designed by the Lord himself for the sake of his pastimes in the material world. Thus, he plainly says that it was done with his approval. Otherwise, it would have been impossible for inhabitants of Vaikuntha to come back to the material world simply because of a Brahminical curse. The Lord especially blesses the so-called culprits. All glories unto you. A devotee once accepted by the Lord can never fall down. This is the conclusion of this incident. It's all arrangement so that Krishna can enjoy his pastimes. But Krishna is also performing his pastime of coming to the material world, not just for selfish motives, not just for his own pleasure, but to benefit the inhabitants of the material world. Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya jaduskritam dharma samstapanartaya sambhavami yuge yuge. Krishna explains to Arjuna, I come to this world in every age, age after age. The appearances of the Lord may be infrequent, according to our calculation, an age is hundreds of thousands of years at least, depending on what kind of age he's talking about here, but at least it's hundreds of thousands of years. So we have to wait a long time before the Lord appears again, if we miss this appearance. And he's going to appear in some other form. We may not even recognize him. Just like Lakshmi Devi, she had a hard time at first recognizing that Narasimhadev was her husband. So we may not even recognize the Lord when he comes next time. Not if he comes in the form of some animal, some lowly creature. We may not even realize this is Vishnu. So we should take advantage of the opportunity we have now. Anyway, Krishna says he comes for purposes related to benefiting the conditioned souls, the inhabitants of the material world. First of all, Paritranaya Sadhunam, to deliver the saintly people. That can be understood in a simple way, that simply, the demons are attacking them, so he has to fight the demons. But that's not really the essence of it. Krishna can defeat the demons without lifting a finger, without making a personal appearance. He has his agents. The material nature herself and all the demigods are his agents. They can arrange to dispose of any demons that are bothersome. So, there can be arranged an epidemic or some other disaster. Who was it? Wasn't a demon, but a big Mughal king, the father of Akbar. He fell down a flight of stairs and died. He was going up to his observatory to see the moon or some stars and slipped on the steps and fell down the stairs and died. So, Lord Vishnu could have arranged to dispose of Hiranyakashipu in the same way. He could have slipped on a banana peel and fallen down the stairs. Yeah. It's not necessary for the Lord to appear just to dispose of demons. So many demons are destroyed by war, by famine, by plagues. Millions can be disposed of in one swoop. Just as at Kurukshetra, although Krishna was present, but 6 million warriors were killed, and many of them were demoniac at one time. So it's not really necessary for Lord Vishnu to come himself to this world just to get rid of demons, to save the devotees in that sense. But the real disaster that the devotees are suffering is not that they're being threatened by demons. Devotees don't think so. Vasudeva and Devaki were not primarily afraid of Kamsa. They were afraid for Krishna. They were afraid, they were fearful of being separated from Krishna. That was their real fear. If Vasudeva and Devaki took Kamsa seriously, more seriously than they did, they could have never become Krishna's parents. Can you imagine what psychological effect it would have on a mother to have 6 of her children killed, and then herself, her and her husband, to be imprisoned, to have their lives constantly threatened by Kamsa. How could someone be in a fit state to become the mother of Krishna in such a, if that person is affected in an ordinary way by such harassment? How much more can you harass a mother to kill 6 of her sons and then throw her in prison also? So Vasudeva and Devaki must have been very transcendental to tolerate all of this and still be in a fit frame of mind to receive Krishna as their son. So that must mean that what caused them anxiety was not Kamsa. They didn't take Kamsa seriously. They trusted Krishna. Krishna will appear and very easily get rid of this little demon, Kamsa. They were confident of that. And therefore, they tolerated all the persecutions of Kamsa with an equal mind. Just like Vasudeva, when on the wedding day, Kamsa threatened to kill Devaki, Vasudeva was able to respond with a cool head. I mean, that he wasn't panicking, he wasn't in terror of Kamsa. He was able to deal with him dispassionately,
calmly.
So great devotees are not afraid of any demons or any forces of nature. They don't need to be saved from these things. They trust that Krishna is going to protect them. Krishna rakshasiti vishwaso. One of the six symptoms of sharanagati, of actually taking shelter of the Lord, is that you're confident that Krishna will protect me no matter what happens, no matter who attacks. With that confidence, the devotees are not afraid of any enemy or any catastrophe. Similarly, at the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance, the Muslim invaders were a great threat, especially in Navadvip, in Bengal. Because the Mughal Empire was established in Agra and later moved to Delhi. It was in Agra at that time. But they didn't really control Bengal, the Mughals. Bengal was taken over by Muslims only later than the rest of India, the rest of northern India. And the Bengal Muslim kings, the Muslim kings of Bengal, were independent of the Mughal throne. They were a real threat. They were real barbarians. The Mughals in Agra and Delhi, they became a little civilized. They even tolerated the Hindus, except for this Aurangzeb. There was promotion of Vaishnav culture under great kings like Akbar. But over in Bengal, these Muslims were unpredictable, vicious rulers. And especially in Navadvip, which is very close to the capital. We visited, what is this place? Balal Sain's, the ruins of his palace? It's in Navadvip Mandala. We visited it on the Parikrama. That is the capital, ancient capital of Goda. Not far from Navadvip at all. 15, 20 kilometers. And that was the seat of the king of Bengal. So the capital was very close. The king was close. His army was close. And they could swoop down on Navadvip and sack the town anytime they wanted to. The citizens of Navadvip had every reason to be in terror of the government. And therefore be very hesitant to make any public display of religious activities. So basically the Hindus were very low-key and, were not assembling in public. They should have been terrified to perform some kirtan publicly. But when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, at the age of 16, began the Sankirtan movement, I think he was 16, he told them, I don't care about the government. You're telling me you're afraid that they're going to come and clamp down and maybe throw us all in jail or kill all of us. I don't care about this silly government. Let's go on with our Sankirtan. This is mentioned in Chaitanya Bhagavat. Devotees would come and warn Lord Chaitanya, if we do these things, they're going to kill us. The government's going to come. The Muslims are going to come and stop us and kill us. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told them not to be afraid, and they listened to him. And they fearlessly performed Sankirtan publicly in Navadvip. So again, when it comes down to it, the devotees are not afraid of any enemy. So what does it mean, Parajanaya Sadhunam? What do the devotees have to be delivered from? Pure devotees don't need to be delivered from ordinary demons and forces of nature and catastrophes. There is no catastrophe. There is no enemy for them. So it can only be properly explained that the real catastrophe, the real misery for the devotees is not having Krishna's association, not being able to see Krishna. And for the pure devotees, his giving deliverance means his coming to this world and showing himself. In order to deliver the pure devotees, from the pain of separation. Then, secondarily, he also gets rid of the demons and reestablishes lost principles of religion. Although, actually, he can always deputize his devotees to do that for him. Even the forces of nature can kill the demons, and even an empowered devotee can establish religious principles. So the real purpose the Lord appears is to relieve his devotees from their feelings, their pain of separation. To show himself, first of all, for the satisfaction of his pure devotees, and then also for the benefit of everybody else. So the devotees pray, Namo Brahmanyadevaya, Go Brahmana Hitaya Cha, Jagat Hitaya Krishnaya Govindaya Namo Namaha. We're praying to Krishna who appeared 5,000 years ago. I think this is in the either Vishnu or the Padma Purana, and I don't know who speaks this verse, famous verse we always chant. Obeisance is unto you. Namo Brahmanyadevaya. First of all, so Krishna comes to this world, but what is he, what benefits are, what is he coming for beside his own pleasure? What good is he doing for anybody else? Who is he coming for? Who? First of all, for the Brahmanas. Brahmanyadevaya. He's the Supreme Lord who is especially concerned for the welfare of the Brahmanas. Those, why the Brahmanas? Because they, you know, they're the priestly class, and if you don't respect them, they'll curse you, or they have, you know, influence in the government. You can get in trouble if you don't respect the Brahmins. No, because the Brahmins maintain Dharma, because they maintain the principles of religion, without which the pure devotees cannot peacefully execute devotional service. If the Brahmins don't do their duty of maintaining Dharma, then it's very difficult for the pure devotees to practice Krishna consciousness. There's not a peaceful environment. The Brahmins make the world orderly and peaceful by protecting Dharma. The Kshatriyas are the second class. They also help protect the world by preventing forces of evil from becoming strong. They use their physical strength to protect. But the Brahmins are the greater protectors, because they're maintaining Dharma, and that's the stronger protection. The Brahmins are the greater heroes. Dharmavira, great heroes of religion. They have the courage against all the enticements and entanglements and bondage of the material world. In face of all of that, they maintain simplicity and the purity of religion. So, Namo Brahmanyadevaya. Therefore, Krishna favors the Brahmins first. He comes to this world, first of all, to give satisfaction to the Brahmins. So, see especially the appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Most of his personal associates were Brahmanas, born Brahmins, Bengali Brahmins, Arisan Brahmins, Brahmins in the south. Then, Namo Brahmanyadevaya, Go Brahmana Hitaya Cha. Your purpose, you come to this world. What you do in the spiritual world, that may be something else. But when you come to this world, what is your purpose? Go Brahmana Hitaya Cha. You're acting for the benefit of the cows and the Brahmanas especially. So, we mentioned the Brahmins first, now the cows and the Brahmins again. Jagat Hitaya, and then everybody else, then the whole world. Third on the list. Cows, Brahmins, and the rest of the world. Krishna's acting for their benefit. By giving his mercy to the cows and the Brahmanas, Krishna manages to give his mercy to everybody by doing that. That's Paritranaya Sadhudam. The Lord appearing to deliver his devotees. When Krishna appears, he shows his pastimes. In his different incarnations, he has different pastimes. They vary, different kinds of pastimes. Sometimes killing demons, sometimes having loving reciprocations with his intimate devotees, sometimes doing various things to uphold religion. Different forms, different pastimes. But all of them serve to deliver the devotees and maintain the principles of religion. So the Lord, this is why he comes to this world. He has his own pleasure, but he also wants to help us in this world. He wants to make it possible for us to come back to him. If he doesn't reveal his avatars in this world, how can anybody know factually about God? How can anybody have any certain knowledge of what and who God is? If he never shows himself, then the philosophers would have to just speculate about him. Just like the philosophers who don't accept the authority of the Vedic literature, and they don't have any picture of God, they have no understanding of his personality, they're speculating about him, guessing wildly about what God is and what he isn't. Even the major religions of the West, Judaism, Christianity, they're guessing about what God is. They have no picture, and they don't know his name. They don't know anything about his activities. All they have is a negative picture about him. They know what he isn't, but they don't know what he is. The ancient Jews, they had the tabernacle, a box, like a palanquin. And God was sitting inside the box. But nobody ever looked in the box, like a portable altar, but nobody ever took darshan. Nobody was allowed to. What was in that box, nobody knew. If any man opened the box and looked inside, he'd be struck down by lightning immediately, die. Once a year, the high priest was supposed to check the box, once a year, I guess on Yom Kippur. And if he wasn't perfectly pure, he'd die. So nobody got God is just some empty box or something hiding in a box and nobody can see. What's his name? What does he look like? How did he get in that box? Nobody knows. But in the Vedas, especially Srimad Bhagavatam and some of the other Puranas, a few of the Upanishads, there's vivid description of the personality of God. How did this description get there? Because Krishna appeared in these avatars. And great sages like Vyasadeva recorded these appearances in the Puranas and other books. Just like in the Skanda Purana, I think it's Skanda Purana, there are 65 chapters describing the Leela of Lord Parashuram. So Vyasadeva knew about these pastimes. Maybe he didn't see them personally, but he heard accounts from others who saw the pastimes of Lord Parashuram. And he recorded them in the Skanda Purana, elaborately. No guesswork. Eyewitness accounts of the Leela of the Lord, coming from Parampara, recorded by the great sages like Vyas in the Shastras, Vedic Shastras. Because the Lord actually shows himself in various points of history, in various places, in various forms, we have knowledge of these appearances. We know what the God looks like. We know his names. We know what he does. We know who his friends are. Because he came and showed us many times. This is what's special about our religion as opposed to the modern religions. We have all this knowledge that nobody else has. Our sages, our prophets, can tell you what God looks like and who he is, his whole personality. And then they can train you up so that you can see God also. There are mystics, the Sufis and the Muslims in the Arabian desert that go off and wander off and become hermits and meditate in some cave or someplace up on a mountain. And then see God. So there, in all societies, there are mystics who think they saw God. Maybe they did. Even the Aborigines, they have their medicine men, shamans. Some of them think they saw God. Maybe they did see God. But our Vedic sages, not only they see God, but they can teach you how to see God also. They can give practical instructions to ordinary human beings to become fit how to see and understand the personality of God. That you will not find in any other culture, any other religion, any other scripture. And the Lord's appearing in his avatars makes it possible to know him as a person. So one of the avatars is the avatar of Lord Nrisimha, one of the major avatars. I think it's among the five most powerful avatars, including Krishna. Four. Krishna, Ram, Vamana, Nrsimha are the four most important avatars, most potent, in which Krishna reveals his potency most completely. I think I have the list right. I think Nrsimha is fourth, after Vamanadeva. Vamanadeva shows the Lord's beauty to a great extent. Lord Nrsimha shows the Lord's anger and his power and how he protects his devotees, his determination to protect his devotees. That's shown by Lord Nrsimhadeva. Krishna, Lord Narayan, wants to show this in the material world. He wants to show the material world, the people here, how he protects his devotees and what he does to demons who try to destroy his devotees. So therefore Lord Narayan wants to make this appearance. Therefore he arranges for his two doorkeepers to commit an offense against the Kumaras and get cursed, so that this pastime can be arranged for. Send his devotees down. One of them can become the father of Prahlad, Hiranyakashipu, and then he can come to kill this Hiranyakashipu and defend Prahlad. And then also for his own pleasure. Krishna likes to fight. It's a propensity that's natural and it's original in God to want to have a good fight. But who can he fight with in Vaikuntha? No one dares to oppose him, even verbally. If he starts yelling at someone, the devotee will just bow down and accept the challenge. Will accept whatever chastisement Lord Narayan gives him. He can't get into a fight with anybody, not even his wife in Vaikuntha. What a place. You can't even get into a good fight with your wife. So he has to send devotees down to the material world to become demons, just to have a good fight. No other way to arrange it. So for his own pleasure also, to save the world by revealing his pastimes and to make it possible to enjoy this special rasa of fighting, he has to arrange that Jaya and Vijaya become cursed and become the great demons. First Hiranyakashipu and the Hiranyaksha, and then two other lifetimes. As Prabhupada explains, it's all the Lord's own arrangement for his own purposes. To save his devotees, to save the world, and to promote his own pleasure. Okay, so I'll stop here. Does anybody have any further ideas or any questions? Yes, Prabhupada.
There are some sincere devotees that sometimes get involved in discussions even with some unqualified person like myself, who asked, like in this text and purport, and also in some of the previous texts and purports, they express confusion as to how we fell from Vaikuntha, the spiritual world, specifically dealing with like the purport that we heard this morning, that the conclusion is that one just doesn't fall from Vaikuntha. Those are not Prabhupada's exact words, but there are several statements which seem to imply that you just don't fall. Once accepted by the Lord, the devotee never falls. Now I'm aware that Srila Prabhupada made certain statements, but what can I tell devotees whose minds get confused by this?
Tell them it's not all black and white. Same purports describing how they're falling. Yeah, nobody falls, but Jaya and Vijaya fall. What do you call it? You don't want to call it falling. You know, their vertical position is changing from higher to lower. You don't want to call it falling. But
that was special. Prabhupada says, I think he just said that in the purport today, that that's a special. That shouldn't be understood that one falls, that was just a special arrangement. They fell because, as you say, the Lord wanted to have a good fight and wanted to have other purposes. But Srila Prabhupada takes pains to say that this is not the usual.
So they're the only two people who ever came down from Vaikuntha. Nobody else ever came down. Does that make sense?
Sometimes these texts they use as references,
yes,
to say that we couldn't fall here. The conclusion is,
yes,
we can read it again, it says the conclusion is that this is special that people get known.
But okay, all I know is that Prabhupada says otherwise elsewhere, that we were with Krishna and we fell down. Doesn't he say that? Yeah. Didn't he name his magazine Back to Godhead? How do you go back to a place where you weren't before? So maybe it's not technically a fall down, but we were with Godhead, and now we're separated from Godhead, and we're trying to get back to Godhead. No? I think that's our basic understanding of our predicament. The way Prabhupada presents it. So if he makes this statement here that and in a few other places that nobody falls down from Vaikuntha, we have to see that in the light of other things that he said also. And it's basic. If we take away that basic premise that we were with Krishna, we fell from grace, however you want to explain it, describe it, and we have to recover that loving relationship with Krishna. If it's something else, if we always were fallen, or it's all Krishna's choice that we fell and not ours, then, okay, suppose we were always fallen. Whose fault is it then? If we were created in the material world, we never were in the spiritual world. Or we were in some limbo, you know, some nowhere, and then, you know, whose fault is that? It's the fault of the person who arranged it. And we didn't arrange it, Krishna arranged it. So why should I feel sorry that I fell down, since I didn't fall down? Why do I have to rectify myself? I didn't do anything wrong. It spoils our whole philosophy. It spoils our whole motive for practicing Krishna consciousness. So why should we want to become purified? It's not my fault I'm dirty. Krishna threw all this mud on me. Yeah, so I don't see how such an idea that we never, literally, take it literally, that we never fell. I don't see how it fits in with our whole belief and practice. It contradicts everything.
We felt we did something wrong. There is original sin. There's no argument about that.
Yes.
But
it wasn't Vaikuntha.
Some devotees described, not from Vaikuntha, described that from Tatasa somehow we allowed ourselves to be attracted to the Maya Jagat rather than the Chit Jagat. So it's not necessarily that because we didn't fall from spiritual world, from Vaikuntha or Goloka, that there wasn't original sin, that there was...
Hare Krishna. Then it gets confusing. Where's this tatasta? Physically, where is it? I know metaphysically we are on the edge, but where is that edge? Is it a place? A physical place? Can you show it on the map? Or on some star chart? It's not.
I'm still looking for it.
It's not. It's not a place. It's our constitutional position, but it's not a physical location. So it's not. Anyway, I don't know. Then it gets confusing, because if we want to ask the question, where did we fall from, and when, and why? Where we were originally, maybe it wasn't Vaikuntha. You can say hypothetically, but it was probably not the material world. We came to the material world from somewhere else. So we were originally outside of the scope of material time and space. So you can't ask where and when, because we originally weren't in the scope of where and when. You know, our human language is based on the concepts of time and space, which are material. Take them away and we can't say anything. Not in our language. You know, people in Vaikuntha have a different kind of language. They don't have material time and space, and they're talking about a whole different realm, a whole different existence. But our existence is bound in material time and space. And where we fell down from was outside of that material time and space, so therefore we can't even ask the question or expect a sensible answer that we can understand. And that's why we get confused, because we're going out of our, you know, we're delving into questions that we're not even meant to ask, and we can't expect to understand the answer. That's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur warns, I think, in Chaitanya and Jayavadharma somewhere. That one should not, you know, the one's going to get in trouble if he even tries to speculate about these matters, about where and when we fell down from. I see Krishna.
No.
Okay. Yeah.
I have a question. The four Kumaras, they came. No, they get. I think Prabhupada mentions it somewhere, you may can't remember. They came and then to Vaikuntha and then they returned. So is it, looking at it that way, why if they came to Vaikuntha didn't they just stay? Why did they come back?
Well, one explanation is that they didn't get as much mercy as Jayavijaya. They were not surrendered devotees the same way Jayavijaya. They're just newcomers. Four Kumaras are mentioned by Rupa Goswami in Nectar Devotion as an example of neophytes. That they're what is their? They're Gyanis. Okay, their categories as Gyanis. Gyani, Artogyagasa, Articha. These are four kinds of Kanishtha Adhikaris. They're just beginners in devotional service. Their devotional service began after they came to Vaikuntha and smelled the tulsi leaves on Vishnu's feet. So compared to them, Jayavijaya are much greater devotees, according to Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. Therefore, Vishnu Narayan doesn't deal with the four Kumaras in the same way. Jayavijaya promised, you're only going away for a short time and you're coming back here and you'll be with me forever. He doesn't say that to the four Kumaras. They get their short, you know, they got a tourist visa, transit visa, they come to see Narayan and they have to go back to the material world, back to their Tapaloka, at least for now. Okay.
Just the other day, Jayadvaita Goswami addressed the same question he's giving class here, and he suggested that they had service, and then described that each of the four Kumaras was teaching a different principle. So
yes.
Each of them had a particular elevated principle to disseminate, and
that yes.
was actually, even though they had just really become in their hearts, you know, Vaishnavas. But they were still ecstatic because they weren't going back for any anivrti, but rather for performing devotional service. So he saw it like that.
Yes, for preaching, and they have their Vaishnava Sampradaya. So they're Vaishnava preachers. They have to come back to this world to preach. Jayavijaya, they're preaching in the form of participating with Krishna's Leela as demons. Not recommended, you know, to follow in their footsteps. Not normal devotional service. But for the four Kumaras to go back to the material world is to continue their devotional service. Okay, thank you. Yeah, Terminator?
When a fall down occurs by the desire of the Lord, like in the case of Jayavijaya, does that mean that the lives of those demons, like controlled by
Yes. Especially since they are participants in the Leela of Prahlad and Nrisimha. To become a participant, even a minor, even an inimical participant, you have to come under the influence of Yogamaya, because the Leelas are entirely conducted under the auspices of Yogamaya, the Lord's Leelas. Even if you're a demon in those Leelas, you're under the influence of Yogamaya. You may not be a willing participant. You may not have any love for Krishna. You may hate him, but you're acting under the influence of Yogamaya to be in his pastimes. But anyway, what was the point I wanted to make? I forgot. There was another point. I forgot. Yeah.
But even like when Kalki comes in, there are those like really nasty little squirming, horrible demons that, and there are so many of them. The whole planet is all.
Yes.
They're not. I thought they were in the lowest. I thought the denizens of the end of Kali Yuga, they're just the lowest of the low.
Yes.
In the most tama of the tamagun, and maybe with all the passion just to make it dangerous and horrible, and they're just eating each other. They have the exalted yoga mind.
Not during most of their lives. Almost everything they did, these little demons at the end of Kali Yuga, Hare Krishna, almost everything they do is under the control of material energy. But the one thing at the end that they get exterminated by Lord Kalki, that's under the influence of Yogamaya.
Momentary.
You know, it's a momentary participation, but that's under the influence of Yogamaya. Yes.
I read in the Bihava Gautamita that on the Tapaloka, when Gopu Kumar was not satisfied not to see the Lord by his eyes, the four kumaras, the two form of the avatars.
Yes.
It is some material city, or it is it is showing their transcendental ability.
They appeared. They actually took the form. They appeared in the form of Vishnu in various avatars, various incarnations of Vishnu. It can't be just a material power. Someone has the power to reveal Krishna only on the strength of devotional service. A materialist, even a yogi, cannot do that. He may be able to, show so many tricks, but he can't show Krishna. He can't reveal Krishna in the heart of a conditioned soul. He can't clean that heart and make the devotee disposed to devotional service. No yogi has that power. Only a pure devotee can do that. So it's in the and what to speak of, turn your own body into the body of Vishnu, make yourself look like Vishnu. That special revelation, that's not possible unless you're a pure devotee. Only on the strength of Shuddha Bhakti is that possible. So we must assume that the Kumaras are acting in the capacity of pure devotees, not just as mystic yogis when they're doing that. If they were showing something material, okay, but what they're showing is the most transcendental revelation. It's only possible on the strength of devotional service. Okay, anything else? Okay, thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jaya. Hare Krishna.